Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
What the hell is going on out here?
It is a Wild West, or dare I say Wild East situation in the world of wrestling, and particularly the world of Japanese professional wrestling. Yeah, a lot going on in Japan, contrary to what you used to hear on this website from other shows quite often.
Yeah, and thank God we are here. Your favorite non-Brian and Dave show on this website.
Yes.
Like Big Audio Nightmare, the longest reigning show on this website, other than the Brian and Vinny show.
The official.
Longer than Observer Radio? Was Observer Radio actually a titled show?
I don't believe so. Because it wasn't a titled show because there was we predate the merger by several years. We started in March of 2016, meaning that we are, or of 2006, excuse me, meaning that we are in our 16th year. And the merger came, what, 2007, 2008, somewhere around there?
Yeah. Wow. Man.
Yes. The unofficial, but official. If you take message board polls seriously, and by God, who doesn't, we are the favorite by pretty much a landslide non-Brian and Dave show here on the website. And I hear that more people than ever coming very soon are going to be exposed to this very show. So a little bit of a tease, which won't affect you if you're listening because you're a subscriber, unless you are on the dark web and getting this show for free through illicit means. But yeah, you may be able to tell your friends about the show and get them to hear in a much easier way coming soon.
You know, the last time I exposed myself to a... Never mind, I don't...
What?
That's.
I don't even know where that was going. That couldn't have been bad because no one was talking about anything.
You said
you're talking about exposing yourself to a larger audience. Is that what you were trying to say?
Yes. And it's, you know, the last time I was going to expose myself to a larger audience, I was told it probably wouldn't be a good idea.
So are you Kota Ibushi or Kikuchi in this scenario?
Thankfully, neither. Thankfully, neither.
What a
dog. So if I pass out at any point during this show, don't worry. Just ignore the thump. Adam will keep it moving. And yes.
On top of everything else going on in the wrestling world, making this a crazy week, it's a crazy week as far as Adam Summers' co-hosts are concerned. Nice. I recorded earlier this week with Jeremy Deamer, who, if you've listened to the show the last few weeks, has ably filled in for a segment here or there with me, talking various things, shows we've attended live, other stuff. He's been sick. He's been down with the COVID, down with the sickness, I guess you could say. But we persevered and we recorded a show still this week. For our bonus content, Patreon subscribers to the bonus feed of Wrestling at Random. So that goes up on Thursday. And then here I am recording with you, and you sound like you've got a tissue box jammed up your nostrils as well.
Literally, if you saw Wrestling Observer Live today. But yeah.
I did not.
The tissues are right here. And yeah, the nor'easter blew in, massive temperature change. And usually I complain because down here where I am, we don't get much when it comes to spring. It usually will go from cold to hot pretty quickly and in one swoop. And it's like, man, I really wish we would have had a spring. Well, it's been a whole lot of spring with various temperature changes, rain for days on end. And then, you know, it's gone from one extreme to another constantly. So that has not helped matters at all. But thankfully for me, no COVID. That was a negative test. My heart goes out for Jeremy and everybody else too.
Everybody is getting it right now. It's crazy how few people up until this point, like in my immediate circle, had it. And then in the last 2 weeks, it's like half the people I know in my life.
And it's really freaking me out too, because it's kind of the same way over here. And it's like, I'm supposed to go to DC this weekend for the
That's
new
right. Oh, and Capital Collision.
You know, I'm already feeling rough as it is. And it's like, I'm really, you know, it's like, it makes you think. It's once again, a slap from, you know, the world, and a reminder from, hey, this thing is still out here and be careful because there's so many people who aren't.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not done with it yet. We will get to, before the end of the show, talking about the card, the main matches, the lineup for for Capital Collision, because I have some thoughts. I'll be interested to see what you think about this, just in terms of not only the card, but sort of the interplay between what's happening in Japan and what's happening in the U.S. You know, you look at this and then you look at Dominion and then how that is going to flow into Forbidden Door. And in some ways, it feels like it's the it's sort of finally the realization of the strategy that Obari, when he was the head of just the U.S. side of New Japan, much less now being the president of the company, you know, had talked about before COVID really took hold. So we'll get there. I don't know. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with whatever the hell is going on with Kota Ibushi in New Japan? Or do you want to go something that we have a little bit more concrete information on, that being Nosawa Rangai being out as the booker of Pro Wrestling Noah?
I was actually going to say go with Noah first. Because, you know, one.
Who knows? Maybe Ibushi will do or say something else crazy between now and then that will shed more light or make it even more confusing.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. But I mean, we haven't done a show, I don't think, since Fujita vacated the title due to COVID.
reported COVID. Yes, that's, we'll just say it was a reported COVID test. We have no reason to believe for sure, by any means, that it wasn't, but I don't know. It's Pro Wrestling Noah, and guys don't like doing jobs, and a lot of different things happen, so I don't know.
Well, 3 years, Nosawa Rangai was in charge of Pro Wrestling Noah, and, you know, I always feel as though I'm got a Noah fan that's got a scope on me right now, because I've never pushed out a lot of the stuff that they've done, and so I almost don't even know what to say, because I don't want to come off and bash anything, but I think, you know.
I'll step in. He accomplished nothing.
That's my opinion at the end of the
did
day.
Did he accomplish?
I know. Well, he got Kidamiya beat a lot.
Yeah, Kiyomiya got beat a lot. Yeah, Kidamiya got beat a lot as well. But you look at Kiyomiya, I mean, that's Nosawa. If you want to talk about his legacy as a booker, and I wrote about this in the 3-count fall issue that came out on Monday this week. But like, his legacy is that no one was elevated. Like, you look at Kiyomiya, Nakajima, Kenno, Kidamiya, much less perpetual opening match young boys that are nearing 30 years old, like Inamura and Kenya Okada. Nobody is in a better position than they were 3 years ago. Arguably, some, if not all of them, are in a worse position, and they're all seen clearly being a level below Keiji Muto, over 50, Kazuyuki Fujita, over 50, Masakatsu Funaki, over 50, Tanaka, right around 50, Hideki Suzuki, not 50, but kind of running the same deal, and Takashi Sugiura, who in some ways is the most important guy in Pro Wrestling Noah, because he's the guy you can launder all the jobs through that the other guys aren't willing to do.
And I think back to people busting your balls and
yeah,
Alan Farrell and other people that looked at the Kiyomiya Muto situation and no, you got to wait and see how it plays out. No, he's going to get his dub back. No, we're going to get this. And it's like, it is real hard. And maybe I shouldn't do this. And I'm not saying everybody should. You come up with your own opinions on everything. But like, if you're going to hang a picture of Nosawa's reign, you know, as booker here, it's Kiyomiya. It's a picture of Muto standing over Kiyomiya, maybe driving over him in a car.
Exactly. Whether it be as Keiji Muto or as Great Muta. No, that's there's two hallmarks, two things that are emblematic of the past 3 years of Nosawa Rangai's reign. One, everything that we just said about Kiyomiya and sort of by extension, his contemporaries. And then two, the completely nonsensical, bordering on self-parody booking of the junior heavyweight division, where everybody turned on everybody. Every show, Vince Russo would look at that booking and say, man, you must not like the idea of people having friends. it's
crazy.
There's nothing. What positive is there to hang your hat on? And again, like, the positive things about Pro Wrestling Noah have nothing to do with the booking. you could say, I think clearly they have the best production values of any show, of any company, I should say, in Japan by a significant margin.
Fair.
They have great wrestlers, the guys that we just talked about, but none of those guys are Nosawa guys or are guys that Nosawa elevated in any, you know, real conceivable way. And Adam,
what was the point? What, even if, okay, we're bringing in the names, we're bringing back the older guys, they need the bump in attendance, they need the attention, we're recircling the wagons here, whatever it's going to be. Okay, cool. So COVID happened, and you can't really judge what these guys would have done for attendance, although I know you...
Yeah, you can, because you can judge it against what other companies did.
You can, and I know that's
COVID. Contrary to what some people will say, COVID did not only hit Pro Wrestling Noah.
Well, it is true. Can you believe it? It is true. But I know you'll get to the attendance part, but it's like, okay, so, okay, that aspect of it didn't work, and that happened way it happened, so, okay, I can't say that no one can truly say whether it worked or not because COVID happened. Okay, fine.
Here, I can say that it worked or didn't work. But Hold on. Kaz Fujita and Masato Tanaka in Fukuoka drew 500 less people in the same building than Stardom drew this week for a show main evented by not even the main title. It was the white belt, Saya Kamatani and Micah.
Because Micah was in there, brother.
Well, I mean, you're not going to get an argument from me, but still, like, it didn't work. Sorry, it didn't work. Look at the attendance. You said we'll get to it. Let's get to it right now. Look at the attendance for these huge shows that they spent so much time building to that, you know, this was their linchpin for the year until they have the Budokan show. It was the two nights at Sumo Hall. They drew 1,585 people for the junior heavyweight only show, which the attendance isn't shocking. The idea that they thought it was a good idea to do that show in that building is still shocking. But like, that number is what it is. It's one of the lowest, if not the lowest, paid attendances for a major show in Ryogoku Sumo Hall. But look at the next night for a show with the GHE heavyweight title on the line, tag titles on the line, special guests everywhere. You bring back in Michael Elgin. You got Simon Gotch on the show. You got all these guys on the show, and they drew 2,000 people.
And at the end of the day, is Kenno better off?
No.
Kiyomiya better off?
Hell no.
Is Nakajima better off?
Let's get to let's touch on that for a second.
The only thing I'm going to say is when you have somebody like Nakajima, to me, he should have been Cena, or he should have been, I don't want to say above all of this other stuff, but he should have been the one shining Noah star, no matter who came in, no matter who went out. And I don't feel as though he is that.
Yeah. Don't say. What's happened with Nakajima lately? That pin that he took against Hideki Suzuki, which I don't believe Suzuki has yet gotten up from that pin. I think the count could still be happening right now. He's still covering Nakajima as we record this. And then Nakajima drops the fall in a tag team match on May 4th. He drops the fall to Michael Elgin to set up Michael Elgin versus Manabu Soya the next night. And going from there, Nakajima not booked in a match on the 14-match card that is the Cyber Fight Festival coming up on June 12th.
Maybe you just got to wait and see how it plays out, Adam.
Yeah, this is all a long, long term thing. And we're going to have maybe at the Budokan, we're going to have Fujita put over Nakajima, or maybe even better, Hideki Suzuki will put over Nakajima, and Kiyomiya will finally get his decisive victory over Muto, you know, on that same show later in the year. Just gotta wait for it.
It's yeah.
And so, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be glib. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but We had so many people telling us that we just didn't understand. You just got to wait. You just got to wait. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
And I understand having some, believe me, I have no problems, you know, saying things with gusto and ego and confidence. That's one of the reasons that, you know, I've been able to do this for 20 years. With that said, there was an almost like fuck you venom from some of the people of Noah. Of like, this is, I don't know. And I know you felt it as well, too, where it was almost like there was a whip, you know, snap at the end of the thing where it's just like, now y'all don't get it. And this New Japan thing and whatever it is that they, it just was like, you're telling me how fucking stupid I am for not buying into this. And then like we get to the end here and it's like, this is where it's at.
Yeah, no, the foul boat sunk. And now we've got the guy that in some ways is partially responsible for a lot of the stuff we've seen recently as this transition was going to take place. We've got Kendo Koshin. Kendo Koshin is going to be the guy with the pencil now in Pro Wrestling Noah. So if you didn't like seeing Kaz Fujita with the GHC heavyweight title, if you're not feeling Hideki Suzuki not jobbing, if you're ready for someone other than Masakatsu Funaki to be the champion, the GHC national champion, you probably got the wrong booker here. As I wrote in Three Count Fall, I think the best thing we can hope for is maybe slightly less incoherent. I'm not going to say coherent, but slightly less incoherent booking from Kendo Koshin in the junior heavyweight division, at least.
And Kendo Koshin's great booking prowess came from.
Exactly. There is none.
I told you to be everybody.
Think about where we're at, where it's fascinating to me. And we've talked about this before, that in all these major companies, it's like it's 90s indies guys or like guys that washed out from the scene for like decades at a time that are now in control from a booking standpoint of these major companies. We had Nosawa that transitions onto Kendo Koshin. Obviously there's Gato and Dick Togo, and we'll get to that a little bit later. You know, you've had guys like Shuji Ishikawa, Tajiri involved on the All Japan side in terms of decision-making. Like, it's just amazing to me that, you know, that's kind of where we're at. It's, I'm not making a value judgment because obviously Gato did a great job for a long time. I don't think we're in that time period right now, but he did do a great job. And you know, Tajiri, I think after some less than stellar efforts, I feel like this year All Japan has had, you know, they've had a great start to their year. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see a real strong light at the end of the tunnel here for Pro Wrestling Noah, because I don't think that a lot of the issues that we just talked about and guys that should be the focal point of the company, I don't think under Kendo Koshin, you know, Katsuhiko Nakajima or Kenno is going to be the focus of the company.
How invested, and I know he is very invested, you know, I wonder if one day Jun Akiyama, you know, they take, and again, I don't know if that's helping anything, but, you know, DDT, again, different, completely different company doing different things. But, you know, a lot of wrestling booking is, you know, it's really basic. It's really simple when it kind of breaks right down to it. And, you know, I wonder if there's at some point, maybe depending on how this goes, does he slide over and take that position? Is that worth it doing for him, or is he happy building and being involved in what's going on with DDT and the uniqueness of that product? Interesting.
It is interesting. I don't think it could be worse, you know, if they did slide him over. I mean, DDT has their own issues as well. It doesn't get talked about as much, but, you know, to use the Dave Meltzer quote there, to paraphrase him, they're not knocking him dead either. They just ran Yokohama Budokan and only drew like 850 people for what, in theory, with Takeshita out of the company, you know, for the next year or so, however long that's going to be in AEW. In theory, Tetsuya Endo versus Yuki Ueno, that should be like your top rivalry. The match was good, not great, but that should be something that at least your hardcore fans draws. And they only drew 850 people. Big Japan drew almost 1,000 more people a couple of days later in that same building. So it's, you know, CyberFight, for all the bells and whistles, and the app is great. They've got a ton of companies, you know, the production values are great, but you know, you look at those two, you look at Tokyo Joshi Pro, who did have, you know, the big Sumo Hall show, which did very well by sort of their standards. But like, you look at their main event scene, I mean, there's nobody new in the mix there. Like, it's not all roses on the CyberFight side either.
I'll say this, with Takeshita being over here, I hope at some point, and they don't have to make a big deal out of it, I hope Tetsuya Endo does come over, and I hope, again, in my fantasy booking mind, there's enough spots on big shows where it's like, if you, depending on what they decide to do with Takeshita, it's like, I would love to see them bring Endo over and they just tear the house down.
It would be awesome, even as a one-off deal to bring him in. I think it's pretty clear when you watch a match like Endo versus Ueno, though, that Endo, he needs the right opponent to have a great match. Like, I don't think his ceiling, like, if he were to do what Takeshita is doing right now as far as spending a year in the U.S., I don't think Endo's ceiling in that environment is anywhere near as high as Takeshita's is right now in AEW. Like, I don't think it's even close.
No, it's absolutely not. But like, you know, to what your point, you know, to me, you bring him over, that's the best match that Takeshita could have.
Yeah.
To me, you know, with the best opponent, with the guy who knows him the best. And it's like, it's just, it's amazing now, Adam, thinking about, it's been 10 years since they debuted.
Yeah.
It's like, we used to talk about, remember, again, 5-6 years ago, all of these people 25 and under, whether it be Endo or Takeshita or Ben Carter, or you just start going down the list of names where it's like, and again, these guys, and he, I mean, they're not even, we'll see how it goes. It's amazing. Now, 10 years has already gone by for some of these guys.
Hey, you think of them as being the young guys, but they've been there for so long that even if they're still young by age, you know, they're not young by experience. It's in a different way. It's sort of the same thing with, you know, people like Izumi and Starlight Kid in Stardom, even to more, you know, more of an extreme level, you know, or you think of like someone like Hanan, who is going to, you know, going to break out the next year or so. And it feels like we've been seeing her on shows forever and she hasn't even hit 18 yet.
Well, there's the Takeshita thing, too. You know, we talk about it with Joshi's a lot. And, you know, obviously there's been cases in the States right now. It's Nick Wayne, but, you know, Katsuyuki Nakajima from back in the day. But, like, how old was Takeshita when he started? Because he's not 30.
No.
He's not close. And he's been wrestling for a decade. So it's like, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
One other thing on the Noah front, what do you make of Satoshi Kojima coming in? He's the ex on the Sumo Hall show, teaming with Marufuji, and then he challenges Shiozaki to be the next challenger. That's going to be the main event of the CyberFight Festival on June 12th. But it's such a curious situation in that when Kojima comes out, he came out twice on that show. Both times wearing a Pro Wrestling Noah shirt. He's since had a couple matches on the 4th and 5th in Pro Wrestling Noah. Worn a Pro Wrestling Noah shirt. You know, they introduce him as being from New Japan Pro Wrestling. You hear the announcers mention New Japan Pro Wrestling. But up until like yesterday, I think, New Japan had not pushed any of this on their social media. I wonder if we're in a situation with Kojima where it's kind of where we were at with Jun Akiyama and All Japan and DDT a couple of years ago, where first he was making guest appearances, then he was on loan, and then when his contract expired, he just went full time. So I don't know. I mean, I've wondered about it for a while, seeing, you know, New Japan on one end of sort of the extreme part of the spectrum where, like, you hit a certain age and unless you're Hiroshi Tanahashi, you're not getting a win. And then in Pro Wrestling Noah, you at a certain age and you're not losing. And so you wonder, you know, if any of those guys, you know, if a Kojima and Nagata, even a Tenzan, would look at that and say, you know, it's now or never for me to be a top guy kind of get paid like a top guy, be in main events. And I guess it would make sense that Kojima, a guy that has left New Japan before to follow Keiji Muto somewhere, like it would make sense that he would be more open to that than, say, a guy like Yuji Nagata.
Well, yeah. I mean, I to me, you know, unless they could all leave New Japan, you know, and I don't, nobody would miss the other side. I think obviously from a train, I don't want to say that, but it's like, you know, New Japan's so loaded down with talent. They are loaded down with trainers. They're loaded down with experience. They're loaded down with all that stuff. And Kojima and Tenzan and Nagata as being three examples, they have a lot more to give, even at their ages. And so, and even in their physical condition,
particularly Kojima and Nagata, I think it may be a bit much to say that Tenzan still has a lot to give.
Well, that's true. But I mean, as far as his mind, you know, if you get him on as a trainer and just stand there, you know, and take a tag in the opening match or something like that, helping out young guys, you know, being treated with respect, I think you could do something like that. But with Kojima, you know, those guys, none of them would have to leave. I think New Japan, obviously they're not worried about promoting the fact that he's going to be doing this, but I don't know if that necessarily means that they would break ties to do it. And I don't think he'd have to. And in fact, you know, I think New Japan would probably get a kick out of him going over and being the only man to conquer, you know, every heavyweight championship there's ever been. You know what I mean? So he's at the IWGP championship. He's had the Triple Crown. You know, he hasn't had the GHC title.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be the only guy. I mean, we've seen Muto do that.
But
Shiozaki has done it. There have been guys who have done it.
But at his age, I mean, you know, well, Shiozaki wasn't the IWGP champion.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, sorry. I'm just thinking of GHC and Triple Crown.
But it's like, and I know what you're saying, but it's like, you know, with him, like, I think he's completely fine with doing that. He'd get a kick out of going for 6 months. He doesn't care about dropping the belt or whatever. He wins the belt, has a good time, you know. No, who's gonna to shit on Kojima, you know what I mean? So it's like it would be a win-win all around. Now, where it's not a win, and I like Kojima and I like Hideki Suzuki, I really do.
Yeah, I enjoy him as a wrestler. If he loses every once in a while, I'd enjoy him a lot more, but he's a super fun, unique wrestler to watch.
I don't need Suzuki to be Godzilla per se right now. Now, I understand I'm starting him off strong, but it's like, I do have concern there, and I would have concern with Kojima of what it would the plan be. Is this to elevate somebody at the end? Or is this a way where if someone's COVID gets better?
Yeah, you launder the belt back onto Fujita that way. I mean, yes.
Or even better, Muto.
Muto. He's coming back May 21st. I mean,
and it's not like Kendo Kashin doesn't have a relationship with Muda either. That's the one thing left out in that deal. It's like, nah, they're pretty tight too.
Absolutely. The best case scenario, but it's also the least likely scenario. The best case scenario would be if Kojima is going to win the title, is that Kojima defeats Shiozaki, and then he goes on, makes a defense or two, and then puts over Kiyomiya. Because he wouldn't care. He wouldn't mind doing that. And none of the other legends clearly are willing or interested in doing that. You know, and then Kiyomiya goes on to, you know, to beat Shiozaki. I'm not even going to say he goes on to beat Muto because we know that's not going to happen. But I think it's far more likely that what happens is Kojima wins the belt and then drops it to Fujita. Fujita then gets his win that he was probably going to get over Shiozaki. He gets that win too in a defense. You know, and then we build, and maybe it's later in the year, maybe it's on the big January 1st show, but we build to what they were going to do for Cyber Fight Festival before Muto's hip injury, before Fujita's reported COVID case, all that happened. It was going to be most likely Muto and Fujita at Cyber Fight Festival. So, you know, depending on how much of that was a Nosawa plan and how much of that was something that Kendo Kashin was invested in, and I don't see why he wouldn't be, you know, we still might be going there. Like, I don't think anyone should be getting their hopes up thinking that this means all of a sudden that the guys that drew a lot of people to Pro Wrestling Noah when Wrestle Universe started, you know, guys like Nakajima, Kenno, Kiyomiya, I just don't see any evidence those guys are going to be the big stars. I mean, hell, Kiyomiya right now it looks like his big feud is going to be Simon Gotch.
That was
and Rob Van Dam. Let's not forget that. We got Kiyomiya and Rob Van Dam in 2022 on opposite sides of a six-man tag at the Cyber Fight Festival, but no Nakajima.
If you fell into a time warp and just like we're under a rock and then you crawl out and it's like, so let me tell you about the Noah foreigners, okay? In Japan, Simon Gotch, Chris Ridgway, Michael Elgin, Rene Dupree. Like, I just, you know, it's like, it's such a, it is very unique to look at them on paper. The team.
Thank God for Ninja Mac.
Ninja Mac is, and I know, look, there are people that pros and cons with him. One, he's very young. He can be very out of control, but look, I would bust it. I was one of the ones, you know, when Pac would miss things by a mile and Ricochet and guys like that, it would make me cringe, but it's
Kota Ibushi back in the day.
Ibushi, great example of like, can we stop like jocking this guy? I mean, athletically you can, but sometimes you need to hit the fucking moves still. And yes. Then he started hitting the fucking moves. So, you know, and Ninja Mac is one of those guys who's the exact same way, does not have per se the same type of body control as a Ben Carter or somebody like that wrestling wise, but that is developing. One thing he's absolutely got, being from Cirque du Soleil, having a gymnastic background and all that stuff. I mean, it's not like he doesn't have body control. It's just that sometimes he tries some completely ridiculous shit because he physically thinks he can do it. And in the course of a pro wrestling match or in that moment, it may have not have been the best idea, but for anything anybody wants to say about any of the foreigners that I just named, he absolutely got over a zillion bucks, and he's somebody that juniors division, I mean, he would have been a benefit to anybody's over there, but certainly in Noah, I think he stands out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been incredible to watch him get over more in 1 week than Fujita has in 6 months. Like, the crowd, I mean, that three-way match at the Noah Junior Heavyweight Show on the 29th with what Alpha Wolf, Dragon Bane and Ninja Mac was completely insane. Like you said, some things didn't land, most things did, but like it really stuck out in a good way. You know, when you look at Pro Wrestling Noah and how much of it just feels like a step back right now, it just really felt like a step forward. And, you know, that's hopefully we'll see more of, I don't know, that sort of boldness in terms of bringing in new guys that could be different and exciting. Hopefully we'll see that under caution. I'm not overly optimistic, but yeah, we'll see. Good for Ninja Mac. He earned that contract and then some over the past week.
To reclose the door on the Noah portion of the proceedings.
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can just say that we definitely just, you know, keep an eye on these shows coming up. The show on the 21st, the show on the 30th. You know, you've got there's a 6-man tag on one of those shows, like we said, that has Muto and Kiyomiya on opposite sides. There's a few things that you can look at that will it may give a little bit of a clue about where things are going to go, and also. I guess just watch to see how far Kenya Okada's head flies, which rows at the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th row that it lands when he wrestles Fujita coming up, because that's going to be a beatdown.
Yeah, it's too bad Michael Elgin became somewhat toxic, something to avoid. I don't know. Look, but and I'm not trying to say that he shouldn't have a future or anything, but I think about where he was a couple years ago. And if you would have told me you're putting him together with Kidamiya and you get a team of bowling balls, and it would have been kind of cool. And I just, you know, I guess I hope this works out for him over there, because nothing seems to be working out over here. And the rare times that I don't, like, I see him in the ring and then I have no other thought about him until like something will appear on Twitter where he's fighting with somebody or something like that, and it's like, bruh, Jeff Cobb became a better you.
Yes, exactly, which is hilarious given how that relationship went and the things that Elgin said.
Stinky Jeff.
Yeah, I don't need to see Michael Elgin in pro wrestling, though. I'm not dying for it. I'll just leave it there. There's other guys I'd rather see.
For the tag match coming up on the 21st, Rene Dupree and Hio Del Wagner Jr. against Michael Elgin and Masakin and Mia. And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they don't win the belts. I'd be absolutely shocked. But we shall see, as I like to say. On to the other really weird story. Much weirder, if that's possible. Whatever the hell is going on with Kota Ibushi and New Japan Pro Wrestling, Voices of Wrestling have had some reporting on it. There have been some good translations on Twitter of the Kota Ibushi tweets, some that were...
There were very much hustleations taking place with people having no idea what was going on. Well, it was turning into fanfic.
The most obtuse thing of all was that people taking the Twitter / Google translate of it saying that Kikuchi was the booker, and they thought that meant, through that very dodgy type of translation, that meant that he was the real booker of New Japan and that Gato was a fake figurehead booker. Not thinking and stepping outside of the wrestling bubble in their brain for the slightest of split seconds and thinking, no, if it translated to booker, it probably means like he like literally books people's guest appearances as talent relations. Oh my God. Like, think for a second, people, think.
Apparently, this during Observer Live yesterday, Brian said, apparently Dave in the forum was responding
to
something. And Dave's use of sarcasm is always can be spotty.
Doesn't translate too well to the written word.
Yes. And so apparently he said, made a crack about, you know, the fake booker Gato is trying to fix things right now. And apparently there were people in New Japan who looked at that, didn't understand the sarcasm written in this weird forum, and were like, what the hell is going on? But we've had that recently with a lot of things, like Robinson on Observer Live that confused people, which in hindsight probably
it was a work.
You say it really shouldn't have. If you heard him, it really shouldn't have.
But the this whole Ibushi situation, like, as best I can tell, just from parsing through everything, like, there have been issues for a while, whether it be him being injured, him being sick, him wanting to come back, him being told, no, we're going to hold you out, him saying, well, you let wrestler X wrestle with this injury or this illness, why can't I? There's an element of it, of that. Then he, in March, without asking, without going through whatever proper channels to approve it, appeared as a ringside second on a Just Tap Out show, that being Takami Shinoku's independent promotion. That got him heat with the New Japan office. And if you look at those messages that went back and forth that Ibushi screenshotted and posted between he and Kikuchi, one of the New Japan executives, the guy in question here, it appears as though from the New Japan side, they thought / think that Ibushi did that to try to get himself fired, that he was unhappy, and he figured, well, in his Kota Ibushi brain, such as it is, that if I go and show up at a show I'm not supposed to be on, maybe they'll just get rid of me.
People have done that.
It has happened. It has happened. There have been variations of that in different companies on different continents. He could have just gone full Jeff Hardy and gotten in the ring and then left. There's all different options that he could have done, but
actually, if you told me, like, you gave me a bet on how's Kota Ibushi going to go out, and he just hits, like, you know, whatever it is, and then just, you know, tags out, rolls out, and rolls through the crowd just like Jeff Hardy did, I'd put my money on that.
Well, what I would have put my money on is, like, him hitting a drop kick and then lighting off a bunch of fireworks off his own body, and that shooting him out through the wall outside of the building, and that would be the way he'd leave the company.
You know, Teddy Hart probably had that planned way back when.
Yes, he would have been holding his cat, though.
What a weird situation. What a wacky deal. And here's the thing that I didn't realize, or maybe didn't pay enough attention to, didn't let sink in it a lot. And I, again, this is a story with moving parts, and there have been a lot of issues of, Taka, when he was ostracized from New Japan, it was because he had an affair, correct?
It was, yes. It was a cheating scandal. I mean, there's two different things that happened with Taka. There was the cheating scandal, and that's why he was ostracized. But then the other thing, the excommunicated, whatever you want to say, the other thing was that around that time, when that happened, if you recall, he was forced out of K-Dojo, which was his promotion. K-Dojo became 2AW, and then Taka started just tap out. JTO served then as his home base promotion. The other weird fallout from that as well was that, if you remember, Ayato Yoshida, who he was in K-Dojo, he was like one of their top guys, he was also a part-time, he was splitting time in the New Japan Dojo as a young lion and was wrestling on shows for both companies. When that whole thing went down, you know, at that point, there was no more connection between Taka Michinoku and New Japan. There was no more connection between them and Yoshida, and we never saw Yoshida on New Japan shows again, which, just as an aside, to me is a huge what if, because
I completely forgot about that. That's, I'll be damned. You're obviously exactly right, because of the way everything went down. I didn't really think about that, though.
He showed so much potential then, and then, like, he's so good, and it just seems like he's going to forever just be in 2AW and kicking around a few other indies. Like, if that hadn't happened and New Japan had been able to get him full time, like, he's another guy that could have developed into a top of the card guy by this point in New Japan. Instead, he's just kind of what he is. I know that's a tangent, but I often think about that, and this brought that back up in my mind.
With Taka, there's more as you continue to peel back the onion. I don't know. You know, that's what I was not aware of. I don't believe, and if I was, maybe I missed it, that there may be more. That's where, you know, some of the other parts of this story, it's like, okay, what is actually true here, and what is, you know, going on with some of this stuff? And at the end of the day, you know, is this just a play to get out? Because there's a lot of this is almost like sports, you know, where we're having jockeying over the doctors, you know, my doctor, yeah, and I'm good. You know, your doctor's saying I'm not. It's like,
this is like Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres.
It's like, yeah, I mean, I Kota Ibushi in AEW is inevitable.
Well, it's inevitable, but like, for all the people that are saying like, oh, this means he's going to AEW. Hell no, it doesn't, because New Japan and AEW have never been more closely aligned than they are right now. And I would be absolutely shocked if Tony Khan and AEW risked the relationship that they have with New Japan, which resulted in them selling out the United Center yet again with no matches announced. If they would risk that relationship to book Kota Ibushi after he leaves New Japan, if that's what's going to happen, I don't see that. Like, I honestly think
you get into the thing where your executive vice president, one of his best friends and closest people in the whole wide world, are, then you have that aspect where it's like, well, fuck you. Why would I not sign one of the best talents in the world? And why would we not be doing this? And then
regardless, do you think New Japan would be thrilled, knowing how New Japan operates, like it or not? If Kota Ibushi forces his way out of the company after he had signed a forever contract, as he had said, how much of that was storyline, how much of that is legitimate, whatever. Do you think that New Japan would be like, yeah, that's no problem, if then AEW signed him to a long-term deal and he's in AEW every week with Kenny Omega while they're trying to co-promote with AEW? I don't think that would go over very well.
Adam, New Japan will never be happy looking at AEW and if having to work with anybody else, they'll never be happy doing any of that. They'll never be happy sharing everything. They'll never be happy.
They're happy enough to have done this show, which they wouldn't have done before. I'm not talking about happy. I'm talking about, will it make them want to continue working with them? I think it would cause a serious problem.
It's the legitimacy and of the length of Kota Ibushi's contract, because if he's, you know, again, how long he's actually signed for is everything that matters right there, too. Because, again, the contract runs out, he doesn't re-sign, tough shit. I mean, that's the way it goes, and New Japan's got to buck up and understand that, yeah, Kota Ibushi's friend's going to book him, and it's going to get over like gangbusters in this country. And if you want to come over and work a show with AEW, it may have Kota Ibushi on it, and you may have feelings about that, but tough shit. You know, that's the way it's got to go. That's business. That's what you got to do. But if Kota Ibushi is trying to slime his way out of a contract that he's still got 2 full years on or something like that, and then you have, you know, again, that's where, yes, can that be an issue? Absolutely. If the contract is 100% of this, because other than that, yeah, there's bad feelings and I get all that sort of stuff. But when you have a star of Kota Ibushi's magnitude, as long, you know, that's just the way it's going to have to go. That's the way it's going to have to go. And New Japan's going to have to eat it on that.
Well, you can say that they're going to have, I get what you're saying. Like
they know what you're saying too, but they don't have a choice. They can sit there and be sour faced about it. Absolutely. And they're going to be there. I'm sure they are. Somebody is there right now going, fuck, if things would have been different, we could have, you know, we wouldn't even have to do this with any of these people. You know, they have that mentality. They've always had that mentality. So, with Ibushi and with Omega, that's the whole thing. This is an executive vice president in the company that you're negotiating and doing things with. You can't, you know, I don't know.
Who's
with a guy that you can't, that you would have an issue with.
Yeah, all I'll say is that from my perspective, I think that all of this happening with Ibushi right now makes it far less likely that we're going to see him in an AEW ring anytime soon than making it more likely.
I just, at some point, it's inevitable that he's going to be in there, and it's just going to be interesting to see who it's with, when it's with, all that sort of stuff, and how it actually goes down. But again, we got a long way to get to there, and it really doesn't matter, you know, as far as what's taking place with him in Japan, and it comes to the New Japan roster. Although, you know, obviously they miss him. He's been out so long right now. I mean, you could start laying plans to do other things, and obviously they have, but it's just, boy, what an awkward thing, you know, the whole deal with the New Japan Cup announcing that he wasn't in, and then all that back and forth about that. And it's like, you know, now at least we're getting some clarity on some of that sort of stuff. And it was basically pawn moving.
Yeah,
that's all that was. We're worried about his health, as bad as his health could be. And it's like, it really wasn't really about that in hindsight.
The other thing, too, with this whole thing with Kikuchi and sort of the reputation that he apparently has, and not being well liked by a lot of wrestlers in the company, but having a core of support from some guys, it is amazing how time and time and time again, the issues in New Japan Pro Wrestling, whether they be backstage or issues with the quality of the product right now, how many of those things continue to go back and be connected to the presence of Dick Togo in the company in a position of power?
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way.
I am firmly of the opinion that we are not going to see really, you know, people say, oh, Dantaku, New Japan's back, or, oh, man, like they really, we're not going to see the New Japan that we want to see until Dick Togo is either gone or is significantly lessened in terms of what his influence is. Because whether it be issues like this or the imbalance that we've talked about before and that I've written about lately as well, in terms of how far to the side of quote unquote crappy American style booking, to use an old phrase that you see on the show all the time, how far we've gone to that direction on the Japanese side of New Japan, where like you can look at, you know, this upcoming, you know, the upcoming Dominion show, which we'll talk about in the, you know, in the weeks to come, how many matches are likely to have some sort of interference, ref bump, weapon shot type of aspect to them. You know, there's going to need to be a change on the Gato / Dick Togo front at some point if things are going to be any different than we've seen.
And I don't know. I talk about it so often and so much, and it's so easily fixable because of the talent roster that you have. And
it's easily fixable because all you do is hire someone and tell them to watch how New Japan Strong is booked. Do that.
Yeah, just don't. The DQs and all the worst part is, and this is why I'm just sitting here I'm literally just kind of sitting on my hands, you know, staring dead ahead, and I'm not bearish, I'm not bullish, I'm just sitting here waiting, because the Bullet Club, House of Torture, all that stuff is going to have to be, and it's going to be nice to see Juice back, and I love Jay and all, but the stories are, it's the NW fucking O.
It's been done so many times.
Yes. If you want to somehow, it's too much. And I don't want to be a dick, because again, you look at the best of the Super Juniors lineup, and it's like, you remember why you love wrestling. You know what I mean? You see the names that are in there, and it's like, oh, and the Foreigners, that almost everybody, what a perfect group to have together as the walls of travel come down, and these guys are able to go over. It was so great. And then you look at some of the actual main roster booking stuff, and it's just arg. And the title picture and everything right now just feels like it's in molasses, you know, cold molasses in the wintertime. Okay, we'll see what happens. I'm going to have to be sold. I've got to watch it and see how they plan this out, and if they can get me excited about any of some of the stories, even with the people coming back that I want to see.
Well, think about, to me, the guy that's going to be like the most obvious thing to look at and see how his matches are booked and laid out in the U.S. version of New Japan versus back in Japan. Think about Jay White during this entire time where he hasn't been in Japan. He's been having great matches with all different guys, and there has not been any interference. Sometimes there's a low blow, sometimes there's not, but you don't have all these wacky pratfalls, and the refs don't look like fucking idiots.
Yeah.
And guaranteed, now that he's back in Japan, all of that stuff is going to be back in his matches with Gato in his corner managing him. It's all going to be there again.
Fucking Muppet Show. The ref, why even have refs? It's like when they were, like, you know, that was one thing. Like, remember WCW Backstage Assault, the game? It's like, well, there's no ring. It's like, well, fuck, that's what they want to do, right? It's like Lucha Underground. If they didn't even have a ring and they just fought in a pit, and they basically did, like, I would get it. That's what they want to fucking do.
Just have the timekeeper count 1, 2, 3. Don't have a ref in the ring. Don't even, like, I would rather, as dumb as it is to have every match be no disqualification, I would rather have that than these stupid ref distractions. And then Dick Togo, every tour, trying to come up with something that he thinks is more clever. Like the last thing was on the last tour was, oh, well, the guy's got a submission hold on. And then Dick Togo goes and rings the bell. So the babyface with the submission hold on thinks he won. And then he lets go. And the referee has to tell him, no, you didn't win. And then the ref gets distracted, and there's a low blow, and someone else comes in with a weapon shot. And then there's another low blow, and then somebody hits their finisher, and the House of Torture wins. Like,
what the fuck?
Really?
Exactly.
Like, who is this for? I don't know. I am very excited, though. Stop being so negative. But I am very excited about the Best of the Super Junior tournament, which starts this Sunday.
That's awesome.
B-block action A-block action, I should say, this Sunday in Nagoya. We've got Clark Connors against Ace Austin, which should be awesome. I'm so, so happy for Clark Connors that he's finally getting to go over to Japan after graduating as a young lion and spending this whole pandemic not being able to go, you know, in his home promotion, you know, the proper New Japan. So looking forward to that. We've got Yoshinobu Kanemaru versus Alex Zane, which is should be fun. It's exactly the type of guy that you want to see Alex Zane in there with to kind of help him maybe get to that next level. Those are the type of matches that when guys get sent over to Japan, you're like, yeah, that's, put him in with those guys, because that's going to make him better.
When Alex Zane did the 450 through the pane of glass at the GCW show and got a little glass in his eye, it's just like, you know how bad that could have been? It's just,
yeah.
It was announced. It was like, because there were people at the time that were like, he's fucking an idiot for doing that. Eh, well, maybe, but you know, guys will do things. And
well, it's also what makes Alex Zane Alex Zane. You know, like,
right? He's the sauce, goddammit.
So, I mean, that's and stuff like not necessarily going through glass, but being as fearless as and as insane as he is what got him to a point of getting booked for the best of the Super Junior tournament. So
that's it. It's just crisis averted, you know, there. And how awesome is it that he's in this thing with, again, both of the blocks, and obviously B is more of a block that's, you know, with traditional New Japan, as you look at A with Austin and Zayn, Clark Connors, as you mentioned, Francesco Akira.
So hyped for Francesco Akira being in this tournament. Talk about a guy that when he first showed up in All Japan right before the pandemic, it almost looked like a joke. This tiny little scrawny guy, like 20 years old, like just so short, even by junior heavyweight standards, it just looked ridiculous. He worked so hard. If you've got if you have a subscription to AJPW.TV, I believe they still have on there the little documentary with English language subtitles of him living and wrestling and working in the All Japan Dojo. That guy worked his ass off to become a legitimately great wrestler. And he's leveling up here to New Japan. I can't say that I'm thrilled that his first match is going to be against Sho, but we'll get that out of the way and we'll move on.
One of the things that I'm happy about is he's a member of United Empire, which gives them their junior heavyweight, you know, threat with their tag team threat, with their heavyweight champion / U.S. champion threat, you know. So it's,
and he's in a group where it's not going to be all interference. Yep. It's not going to be a Bullet Club frustration thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to continue to run down the...
You do that.
Yes. Hiromu is next on the Taguchi show. Taiji Ishimori, Yo and Yoshinobu Kanemaru round out Block A.
Yo and Taiji Ishimori.
Didn't I say that?
You said something about Yoshinobu Kanemaru as well.
Well, yes, he's
wrestling Alex Zane, which we had already mentioned.
Well, yes, but yes, I was just going through all of the names that you were.
Yes.
Well, we'll get back on the same page here for Block B here.
Yeah, Taiji Ishimori, by the way, we should reiterate, he is the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. I don't really understand why, other than they want to have Bullet Club having a bunch of belts going into Dominion, but I guess fine, whatever. I don't really see the need of having him beat Phantasmo, but regardless, Block B, which gets going on the 17th, I am hyped for. Just look at the matches, and these are all 10 guys. The matches on the 17th, we have Doki against L. Lindemann, which is going to be awesome. And also, we should mention, too, if you look at the lineup here, it's set up very well that, so L. Lindemann, G-Rex champion, the first champion in GLAIT history, he's defending on the 18th against Shigehiro Irie. I fully expect that he will drop the title to Irie, which then frees him up to lose to other guys in this tournament without it being a weird thing where you're the champion of a company and you're dropping several falls. He'll beat Doki, then he can lose some matches later in the tournament after he drops the G-Rex title. You've got Doki and L. Lindemann, Bushi and El Phantasmo, whatever, fine. Robbie Eagles and Wheeler Yuta. That's going to be awesome. I'm gonna take that silence as your excitement about Master Wato and TJP.
You know, that match I'm not looking forward to there. But yeah, no, Wheeler Yuta and Titan, which you're going to get to here in a moment, make me very, very happy about Block B.
Yes, and L. Lindemann. L. Lindemann is incredible. Yes,
L. Lindemann obviously too. But I can't talk about him anymore. You have to only talk about him, you and your GLAIT ways.
The main event. El Desperado and Titan.
I love Titan. I'm the only one. Am I the only one?
No, he's amazing. I'm so happy he's in the tournament.
He's another guy. Did 10, 15 years ago. Remember we were talking about Dragon Rojo and Hiromu and those guys and some of those great things that would take place in Fantastic Mania and in this juniors and everything. And it's like, what was Titan? The middleweight champion or whatever it was. It's like, I understand, you know, with the other guys, you know, why they are what they are. But I'm looking at Titan. It's like, I can't be the only guy that likes this dude as much as, you know, I do. And there's got to be somebody else out there. And I'm happy to see him in this thing. I didn't expect it. It was kind of out of left field for me to see him in there. And it was like awesome because, again, I think he puts on every time I've seen him. And it's, again, it hasn't been much here, especially in the last couple of years, you know, just with COVID and everything else. Haven't been paying that much attention to Lucha at all. much less, you know, average CMLL shows. But, you know, I always had really, really liked that guy.
100%. No, I'm thrilled to see him in this tournament. And yeah, Block B is stacked. We've got, we're not going to run through everything. We'll get to that as the tournament goes along, but just matches that I'm looking forward to in the next week or so. Hiromu Takahashi against Francesco Akira on the 18th in Sendai should be tremendous. Teton versus L. Lindemann on the 19th should be awesome. We've got coming up Desperado and Wheeler Yuta on the 22nd before three nights in a row on the 24th, 25th, and 26th at Corican Hall, which will have 10 matches on each of those shows, full Block A and Block B action, whereas a lot of the other shows, actually, yeah, there's those three in a row at Corican that have all guys in action, and then the rest of the shows really are like that. We've got the 28th, then the 29th at Oda City General Gymnasium, the 31st Toyama Industrial Exhibition Hall. That's a 10-match show as well with all the tournament stuff. And then June 3rd, it finishes up at Budokan with the final.
God, if CMLL was a normal company. You know, the Teton,
it's a big if.
Teton Wheeler Yuta match that could lead to Wheeler Yuta and, you know, Brian Danielson and John Moxley and everybody coming down to CMLL. And obviously there's politics and all that sort of stuff. But obviously Daniel Bryan has his, you know, Brian Danielson has made it clear that he wants to work, you know, at some point Arena Mexico. And boy, that would be a great way to you know, do something on that show to, you know, to lead to something down the line. It won't happen, but, you know, fantasy book some of these things.
In a world where things made sense, that would be perfect. Before we close the show, just briefly talking about Capital Collision, which you will be attending, health willing, this week. And I did just want to mention, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of these things or not, but I wanted to mention a few of the matches, things that I've watched lately, which just have been great. If you haven't watched the Champion Carnival final, really, if you haven't watched the bulk of the tournament, but if you haven't watched the final between Yuma Aoyagi and Jake Lee, go out of your way to watch that. I wrote a little bit about that in Three Count Fall this week, just how Aoyagi might be the most exciting big match wrestler in the world right now, just because he has so many legitimate finishes, whether it be the Rockstar Buster, the spinning version of that move, the end game, the version of the end game where he steps through in sort of that hammerlock front guillotine submission. He's got a cradle from that position that scored at least one win in the tournament. He's got the spin kick to the face, all those things factored into the finishing stretch of that match. And it's just really, really good stuff. And coming up just in a few days, this Sunday, he gets his title shot in Sapporo against Kento Miyahara. I'm hoping they go all the way with Aoyagi and he wins. I'm not expecting it'll happen, but it should be a great match either way. Those two guys, whether it be as tag partners or as opponents, have great chemistry together.
I guess that's one thing we can't bag on Muto for. Isn't he the one that gave us Jake Lee?
Did he?
I think he may have. Can't remember.
Well, he did something right then, post being a great wrestler part of his career. But yes, All Japan, really under the radar, having a great year from an in-ring perspective for the 50th anniversary of that company as well. That's obviously flying under the radar compared to New Japan's 50th anniversary. But that was very good. Also, if you're able to track down and watch from Big Japan's show that took place, I believe, what was it, May 5th or May 6th, the show I mentioned at the Yokohama Budokan, which was their most successful show in a long time, drawing 1,800 fans to that building, that new building in their home base town of Yokohama. But the tag title match with Hideyoshi Kamitani and Daichi Hashimoto defending against Takuya Nomura and Fuminori Abe. Oh my God, this is an Adam Summers style match, Mike. If you if you have not watched it, go out of your way to watch it. This is on my absolute short list for match of the year candidates. It started out as a struggle, like side headlock takeovers, hip tosses, everything was a struggle in a good way. And then they beat the holy hell out of each other as the match went along, particularly the sequences between Nomura and Hashimoto were just out of this world great. So that's definitely worth watching as well. The Stardom pay-per-view from a couple days ago, love the Saya Kamatani Micah match. Really liked the tag title rematch, which saw Koguma and Hazuki win back the tag titles from Starlight Kid and Momo Watanabe. And then maybe the most interesting result from that show, Mayu Iwatani defeating Tekla to win the SWA title, with Stardom teasing that she may go abroad to defend the championship.
That would be awesome. That would
for, be fucking great. Forbidden Door would work. Stardom has a show on that day, but you know, you're not going to be sending the whole roster. I mean, they're loaded enough now that I don't think they're going to have massive backlash from their fans if for one show they send Mayu Iwatani to Chicago. So we shall see.
And, you know, and I know that they said that they, you know, for all intents, they would not be doing that. But that's still, it's wrestling, so that doesn't mean anything. And even if it doesn't happen on that show, you know, even if she just comes over and appears somewhere, AEW or something like that, you know, it would, again, her not even wrestling on the show, just making an appearance to represent Stardom in the best.
Well, she shows up, she's wrestling. They ain't flying her all the way there and having her miss shows to, like, no, wave at the people while wearing a suit.
But remember, there's the AEW TV around there and all that, you know, too. So it's like, there's, you know, if you could have a wrestle on TV, do something that leads to something down the line, some sort of angle or some sort of face off with somebody, you know, for down the line. You know, that's another thing that I think is, you know, eventually going to happen. And I think is a foregone conclusion is Stardom touring the States, whether.
Oh yeah. No, that'll happen at some point. I mean, they even said, like, before the pandemic hit or as it was hitting, that, like, that was in their plans. We should also mention, by the way, just, and I talked about this a little bit on Twitter, how we forget how wild AEW is. Obviously not without its faults, and we've talked about that extensively on the show, but just think about over the course of, like, a single week, they sold out the United Center for a co-promoted show coming up with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yuya Uemura wrestled an Helico on Dark, or Dark Elevation, I guess. I guess it was Dark because it was from Universal Studios. Takeshita, Konosuke Takeshita, has had several matches, that culminating in a really good match with Jay Lethal on Rampage. And then on that same episode of Rampage, we had Yuka Sakazaki come in from Tokyo Joshi Pro and have a great TV match with Riho. So, dude, like, it's insane that not only is we talk about so much of New Japan and AEW, but that the ongoing relationship between DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, and AEW is in effect as well.
I don't mean this as a negative, but I heard Tony Khan on some show. I heard some clip where he basically called Impact zombie WCW.
Yes. And it's not wrong. He's not wrong.
In a way, but it's like, no, you are zombie WCW. And I don't mean that in a negative, but it's like, because who else, like, you think about, like, those, if you were to take a random 1996 and it's like, this is happening on Nitro, this is happening on Worldwide, this is happening on Saturday Night, and you see the names and it's like, fucking Shima is wrestling on Saturday Night.
And you've got Liz Mark Jr. wrestling Bobby Eaton on Thunder.
It's like, yes, it's like, this is as close as we can get to that. I mean, truly, what we have in AEW is that alternative thing that most of us, either it was our thing or that was the alternative to WWE at the time.
The only thing, I've said this before, the only thing I want out of AEW and what I judge AEW by every single week is how much does Dynamite feel, and Rampage as well, but how much does Dynamite feel like a really good episode of Nitro? And if it gets to that point, I'm fine. That's all I need. And so, yeah, to your point, this is, it's the closest we're ever going to get to some of that insanity in the mid to late 90s in WCW. Well, one thing I did want to mention, because it's a guy that we've talked about a lot on this show that I think a lot of newer fans have never even heard of or don't know a whole lot about, or only know him, you know, from the fact that he got sick and wasn't able to continue wrestling, the news that Fujita Jr. Hayato, Hayato Jr. Fujita, however you want to say it, it's, you know, but he is coming back. He's coming back having a full match. This isn't an exhibition. He's challenging Musashi for the Tohoku Junior Heavyweight Championship in Michinoku Pro in July. Oh my God, I am so excited.
When was this announced?
This was announced just a couple days ago. It was hinted at last week when Fujita, the good Fujita, confronted Musashi at a Michinoku Pro show. I believe the event in July is happening at Korakuen Hall. But man, like, you go back to some of those early podcasts we did, and we talked about his appearances in New Japan, elsewhere as well. But when he was in the Best of the Super Junior, some of the matches that he had, we talked at length about how New Japan desperately needed to try whatever they could to poach this guy, pick him off, because he was such a perfect fit for the company. He was diagnosed with cancer several years ago. Was in pretty dire shape. If you saw him, it was very emotional when he showed up several years ago at Korakuen Hall, wheelchaired out, came into the ring, talked to the fans, you know, vowed to come back. But you actually see him making not just an exhibition match comeback like he did, had a final match, but actually come back as a full wrestler, at least for one match, if not more, is I hope by then we're in a situation where crowds can cheer in Japan, because I cannot imagine how emotional that scene will be.
There's so many talented filmmakers and documentarians that have come along in wrestling, or at least they've applied themselves to professional wrestling. That man deserves a proper, if he's willing to go through it, documentary. His father, Kid Yamamoto, I mean, all of these tragedies and setbacks and this and that. And he is, I mean, this is going to sound so corny, but he's pro wrestling. He is.
Oh, he is. He's 100%
against you, and you're ostracized. You're not this, you're not that. You try to be this, and you got guys pushing against you. No, you're not. And it's just, he's overcome everything, and he'll never be, you know, that name or whatever. But anybody that knows, who comes from our era and that heard those shows and have watched him and saw some of the shit that this guy was able to do, it's such a cool story that it really does deserve to be talked about. And I think a lot of people could get a lot from it, both, you know, whether you do it in Japanese and English, certainly in English. I don't know about Japan, but I can tell you here, if you were to do this and play that story, and I think he would get a lot of new fans, a lot of new people that, you know, would come along and understand what this guy's had to go through and all of the stuff this guy has been through to get where he is. And for him to come back, I didn't hear that. I missed that completely. And I am thrilled, just thrilled. Oh, man. Because it was the tumor. It was the spinal
yes.
tumor.
Yep.
It was the thing that, you know, of all the things people talking about, his body, he's too small, he's going to get bent up, he's doing too much this and that, and he won't last. And, you know, it was never any of that. It was, you know, something that he couldn't control was the thing that got him and drove him out. And for him to overcome that now and come back, it's just the ultimate fucking survivor. It's awesome.
Absolutely. And we should, we can't let it go by while talking about Fujita Jr. Hayato. We cannot let it go by without referencing the amazing work on in several different ways that our good friend, former fill-in co-host many, many years ago on this show, Alan Forel, has done around the career of Fujita Jr. Hayato, whether it be doing an interview with him, writing a great article about him and Katsuhiko Nakajima. If there's anybody on the English speaking side that has done more to get the story out of this incredible man than Alan has, I've not met said person.
I tell you what, another guy survive, you know, a guy to do that interview with him, because he's a guy I don't talk to enough, and I love you, buddy. And man, you know, Hidaka and Fujita, you know, that was a cool time. You know, the Motor City Machine Guns and, you know, Hayashi and Spanky. I'm looking at the 0-1 and it's just like, you know,
well, 0-1 think, I mean, just talk about things that that get forgotten about. Obviously, this isn't related to Hayato, but think about the mid 2000s to early 2010s junior heavyweight division in All Japan, which I still will say is the most underappreciated run of any promotion in modern times. The matches of guys like, you know, Kaz Hayashi, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Shuji Kondo, Kai, Kenny Omega towards the end of that run, Marufuji even having a match or two in that mix. Just incredible stuff. Just a side note.
Make me want to go back and listen to old Admin Mike Big Audio Name.
There you go. All right, let's close it out just very briefly by talking about Capital Collision coming up this weekend, because you've got a show. It's pretty damn good on paper. And the other thing about it, which I touched on a little bit earlier, that I just find really, really interesting is how these U.S. shows, you go back to the show in Chicago, Windy City Riot, and then Wrestling Dontaku, and then Capital Collision, and then leading into Dominion. This feels like this is the most synergy there's been between the U.S. product and the Japanese product. And I don't mean in terms of the style or the booking, because we talked about that before, in terms of like in-match booking. But show to show, we've got things that are leading from Japan back to the U.S., back to Japan. You know, when you look at these cards, it's interesting to see that finally sort of take hold a little bit.
Well, and they need to with Strong. They need to be able to, yeah, do that, because they don't like showing their hands when it comes to their main roster stuff. And obviously they don't like doing it with Strong either. But, you know, it in America, sometimes you got to announce matches and give people a thing to look forward to. You can't just always, you know, depend on, you know, the name is going to sell it, that people need to know what's going on. And you're able to do that through Strong, although we do know that there's not going to be a change in the New Japan Strong Openweight Championship, as Filthy Tom Lawler does not have a defense, not only on Saturday because he's in the multi-man tag match, but I don't think he's booked at all for the Sunday show in Philadelphia. Not on that show at all, unless I missed something there. I'm going to have to go back and look.
Who is not booked for the Sunday show in Philadelphia?
Filthy.
Yeah, I don't see him. I don't know if this is a fully updated list, but yeah, I do not see him on that show.
Does Black Label Pro have a show going on that?
I don't think so. I think that's
Indiana, doesn't he?
The fancy wrestling show, everywhere you're supposed to dress up. That happened last weekend, I think. So
he's hanging out with American Akita, Akira, and Masha Slamovich, and Cole Radrick, and everybody else in Indianapolis. There's got to be something there that keeps drawing that man back as the Midwest champion over there. But he and the rest of Team Filthy, you know, I'm excited to see this. Fred Ross, Rocky Romero, David Finley, Tangaloa, and Yuya Uemura against all of Team Filthy. If Filthy is not standing on top of, hopefully, Fred Rosser's head, we'll see what happens. But I demand Team Filthy come out on top. Ren Narita and Carl Fredericks, I mean, that's
the match I'm looking forward to, honestly, the most of anything that weekend.
And it's like, is it the opening match? Because, you know, how it's listed on the New Japan website.
It's the opening match. It's Narita Fredericks, the 10-man tag that you talked about, Great O'Conn and Chase Owens, which is building.
I love O'Conn, and I'd like to see him smash Owens, but it's like, that's my opener. I'm not putting me, Ren Narita, and Carl Fredericks, and I get why they're doing it, but like, that's a lot bigger match, I think, to the people than, you know, the card suggests.
Yeah, but O'Conn and Chase Owens, that's building to the tag title match back in Japan, so that's why it's got a little bit higher placement. You've got the four way for the U.S. title, and then you've got what is listed right now as the main event of the show: Jay White and Hikuleo defending, or not defending. There's no title there. Jay White and Hikuleo wrestling Kazuchika Okada and Trent Barretta in a preview tag leading to Dominion. So that's what I'm talking about as far as like, yeah, you've got, you know, Ishii versus Kingston. You've got Brody King and Minoru Suzuki. You've got that sort of stuff that is in its own little universe, but we've got a couple matches on this show that lead directly into the Dominion show.
Oh God, seeing Jay White and Okada mix it up again is going to be damn near orgasmic.
First time for you. And obviously, I won't be there, but first time for you since we saw them main event Madison Square Garden, that incredible match, an incredible moment, which you captured on tape. On your, I guess not on tape, but you captured on your phone. I love hearing all our reactions when I go back and watch that.
It really is. And I had to go back and I was watching a lot of stuff that day, you know, like of some of the, just all of us. Man, the Enzo cast.
Oh, my God. You, I have never seen in my life, I've never seen or heard anyone hate other human beings with the bile vigor and venom that you spat at Enzo and Big Cass. I was next to you and I thought you were going to have an aneurysm. Like we were all getting into hating those guys, but you were next level. Like that's honestly, like that's one of the things from that weekend that's most burned in my brain is your reaction to those guys.
Man, if I don't like you, I don't like you.
Well, and they brought them out right by us, right past us. And so.
And it was almost like that they were looking right at us.
Yes.
Like, it was. Let's fucking go. Because that's right. Because remember, we had the ROH, the Dojo guys were behind us. And until I was like, ah, okay. So all that.
I saved that amount of anger for when Kelly Klein defeated Mayu Iwatani. Still not over that, and I still feel like as a fan, I'm owed seeing Mayu Iwatani live in the United States defeating someone in a good match.
You know, and there's the greatest example, the greatest use of Keiji Muto is come out in places like that where we can all be happy to see him and not wrestling and being in the title picture and slipping hips and things like that. But
yes.
Just one thing about former Noah mates that are now back together that kind of because of COVID and everything, I don't want to say it's gone under the radar, obviously, because anybody that's listening to this show would know, but TMDK is back, not only back with Haste and Nichols, but Jonah, which, you know, people, I don't want to say they forget, but, you know, Jonah, I think really once he came to the States, you know, he kind of blew up and kind of got a bigger name and was able to, you know, as Bronson Reed. And there were people that had no idea about his Jonah Rock previous career, but, you know, here they are, I guess, as a trios, you know, and they're going to maybe push forward that way. I would assume that they would. Wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. But Haste and Nichols, I know some people didn't like them. I always thought that they were really solid. And I'm happy to see them back together. And, you know, the match is what it is with Hanare and Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis and Jeff Cobb against those three and Bad Dude Tito. You know, but it's, again, I'm happy to see them back together again. It's going to be fun to see them live because I've never had a chance to see them live before.
Yeah, I mean, Haste and Nichols, like those are two guys for me that I don't ever need to see those guys doing anything other than teaming with each other. Like they're bone dry boring in any other environment. But as a team together, no problem watching them. Jonah, I think, like, if you've been watching Jonah, if you've been watching New Japan Strong, I think it's very clear from the way he's been positioned, the way they've talked about him on commentary, that he's not just a New Japan Strong guy. He's going to be going to Japan, and I would be shocked if he's not in the G1.
Boy, there are so many names. People are going to be disappointed just because.
They'll do a 48-man G1.
Well, that's it's like, you know, you're only going to have a max of 20 guys. And even then, I think that's too much. You know, you could argue that that's too much, but, you know, it's going to be a max of 20, 10 on each side. And you can't have everybody. And when
you're not going to be able to have Yujiro, damn it. What a loss.
Will Chase be in there? Chase probably will be in there because somebody has got to. And again, no offense to him, but somebody's got to pick up L's, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm sure he'll be in there. I'd be very surprised if he's not.
Tanahashi and Ospreay, too. Tanahashi.
It's Tanahashi, Ospreay, Juice Robinson, and John Moxley in a four-way for the U.S. title.
It's like...
That'll be okay.
Do you think Ospreay wins?
I tend to think so because it... Whatever the original plan was for the U.S. title going into the summer, whatever that original plan was, got completely upended by so many things. First, you had Sonata getting hurt, because my guess is what was going to happen was that Ospreay was going to beat Sonata for the U.S. title after, you know, the stoppage win that he had in the tournament. Obviously, Sonata got hurt. Then Ospreay was going to wrestle Tanahashi for the U.S. title, which I think pretty clearly meant Ospreay was going to win there. Then he's out because of COVID. And so, I mean, maybe they'll change course and we'll see Juice Robinson with the U.S. title. But it doesn't seem like Gato, or maybe real Booker Kikuchi, but it doesn't seem like Gato usually likes to stray too far from long-term plans if he doesn't have to. So I don't know. I would guess we're probably looking at Ospreay winning.
You know, you mentioned this, I think. I don't know if it was in a text or if it was...
It's a telegram.
It may have been a carrier pigeon.
Fax. We like to fax back and forth.
Morse code, typed it in. All of the championships, or many of the championships, for the most part, are tied up in faction war.
All tied up with pretty much every major program in domestic New Japan right now. If you look at going into the Dominion card, which let's see if I can pull it up here. Well, they don't have the full card on Pearl Love, but they've got, yeah, I mean, you've got Tama Tonga and Carl Anderson for the never open weight title. You've got the three-way tag, or you've got the tag title match with Fale and Chase against Great O'Conn and Jeff Cobb. You've got Okada and Jay White. You've got, most likely, whoever wins the Best of the Super Junior will be wrestling Taiji Ishimori for the title on that show. I would imagine we'll probably have a never open weight six-man tag title match with the House of Torture involved. So, yes, to answer your question.
You know, to close this thing, for the most part...
Is what you were trying to get to that also would play into Juice Robinson winning the title at Capital Collision?
Possibly. Although, look, I think Ospreay... If Will Ospreay is not in the IWGP title picture, I think he should probably have that U.S. title. Because, again, I like all those guys belted down. You know, I think... The visual of that, you know, to add to the character, you want him to be a winner. I would actually like that idea. And again, he could drop it at any time. And again, if it's Tanahashi, it's fine. If it's Juice, okay. Except again, it puts it in faction wars and all that. So, you know, not big there, but just thinking about this, taking it back to Kota Ibushi to close and just give you something to chew on and give other people something to chew on till the next time we do a show. Say things actually peter out here with Kota Ibushi and they can't work things out in the best of ways. It's like, you know, did we never got what we thought we were going to get. You know what I mean? And I know Kota, the first IWGP world champion, I still thought that he was going to be king of New Japan for a period of time. And because of circumstance and health and everything else, I wonder if we're ever going to get that. And is it really that big of a tragedy if we don't? I'll be disappointed, because it's just something that in my mind I built up into thinking that that was going to happen. And it'll be interesting to see if it actually does, or if the Naitos and certainly the Tanahashis and such, they're on a different plane, but like, the Naitos and the Ospreys and even a Shingo, maybe, that they, when everything is said and done, that, you know, when you, obviously the Omega stuff is different, but just singles Ibushi post Omega, post, you know, into the new era, you know, did we get what we thought we were going to get, and will we ever get it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's looking pretty likely that we won't. And I mean, it's really an entire other podcast we could do about how almost from the moment that Ibushi, you know, they announced the lifetime contract with New Japan, how not well things have gone. Obviously, there were injuries, there were illness, there was whatever the hell they were thinking with unifying the titles and then making it into one title, and the rejection of that really on both sides, the U.S. side and the Japanese side of the fan base. I mean, Ibushi's an incredible wrestler. I mean, this might be a point where it's time, you know, it might just be time for them to go their separate ways. Just like it's time for us to go our separate ways and push stop on this podcast, because we've done about twice as long as we agreed to do beforehand.
I'm going to pass out now.
you do that. Just mention before we go, we each have a few other side projects, if you want to call it that. Three Count Fall, the newsletter that I've mentioned several times that I do each and every week. It has been on Fridays. It's kind of morphed to being a Monday thing the last couple of weeks due to circumstances. We'll see where that settles out, but it's a weekly thing either way. AdamSummers.substack.com. Every week I write about what's going on in Japan, what I'm watching, kind of just the landscape. It's not just a match review thing. That's not what I do. It's really a lot like this podcast, but just in written form, and I don't let Mike write half of it.
That's good for you, because I couldn't read the shit that I wrote. So I love reading that. So no. Three Count Fall. Everybody should sign up for that. I'm serious.
And I'm 17 issues into that right now. So yeah, you can check that out. AdamSummers.substack.com. And then as always, the other podcast that I do every single week with Jeremy Deemer, Wrestling at Random. Go to WrestlingAtRandom.com. You can find on Twitter at WrestleAtRandom. We are in the middle of the season break. Season 3 of the free feed of the podcast has ended. You can go back and listen to all 3 seasons for free at WrestlingAtRandom.com or wherever you get podcasts. But even during the season break, we have new episodes each and every week at the Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. You can support the show there, get new episodes each and every week, even during the season break. Different, weird, crazy stuff every single week. We have an episode of Central States Television from 1983.
Oh, Jesus.
That we are reviewing. It was a Patreon request, someone that subscribes at the tier where they can be the randomizer and tell us what to watch. They chose this episode for us to watch. It has the fake Tiger Mask. Ken Wayne is on the show. We get 2 Ric Flair promos, and joined in progress, the main event of the show is Ric Flair versus Mr. Wrestling number 2.
Holy smokes. Oh my God. Kevin Walt's on the call, I guess, for that.
I assume probably they never tell us who the announcers are on this show, but it's entertaining stuff. There's some weird stuff. There's some good stuff. And there's also my favorite thing when we get to review weekly TV of some sort that isn't on WWE Network/Peacock. We've got some 80s commercials that we talk about that are in the commercial breaks on this show. So good stuff over there as well. WrestlingAtRandom.com. You can just click on the Patreon bonus feed button there, or just go directly to patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom if you want to support the show and get new episodes over there.
Well, the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, if your ears are not filled up already, that's a nice place to go.
That's a lovely visual. Ears that are filled up.
Okay, I'm done.
You do not have enough podcast wax in your ears.
I'm struggling right now, everybody. But hey, yes, the brand newest edition of the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast is up. MidAtlanticPod.com. A look at the TV from January 8th, 1983. Don Kernoodle tears up his own coat. Ricky Steamboat got him, fooled him during a match with Johnny Weaver. Steamboat went out there wearing a blazer, got into the ring. Kernoodle hit him in the face. Steamboat just backed off, let his jacket get torn off of him. Kernoodle tears it up, which leads to a great exchange between Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle, talking to Bob Cottle, being very upset that their things have been torn up. And this is all leading to the Road to Greensboro coming up March 12th, 1983. Kernoodle, this era of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, it starts to become top heavy around here, and one of the worst sells for a podcast that you've ever heard in your entire fucking life. But I love doing this podcast, and what's going on right now is great. Dick Slater is now back in the area, living up to his name of the Unpredictable One. We talk about the Ric Flair Barry Windham feud in Florida, which is actually taking off, and it has a lot of parallels to what's going on with Flair and Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine in Mid-Atlantic. But it's a celebration of old Jim Crockett Promotions Wrestling, of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and of old territorial wrestling, the Mid-Atlantic Pod, as my ears are ringing right now, the amount of junk that are in them. MidAtlanticPod.com is where you can find it. I love the Mid-Atlantic Twitter, though, at MidAtlanticPod on Twitter. It's where I try to post up a lot of stuff, whether you listen to the show or not, whether you love old wrestling or not. There's got to be something there for you. I got clips from forever that I'd love to put up there, and it's just the great history of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And, Adam, it's the worst fucking sell in the world, and I've hit the point where we got to stop now. I have a Patreon as well, too. And I can't remember what it is right now. I think it's patreon.com/midatlanticpodcast. But you can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Instagram. You can find it on Twitter, Facebook. We got a Facebook group, all that sort of stuff. Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast. And I is done.
You did your best Excalibur impersonation there.
Like a whore in church. It is brutal. Oh, my God. I got to make it to DC on Saturday. How is this going to happen?
On that note, we're pushing stop. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.